swift on their part.
So you go to the museums, right?
I do.
Yeah, the art museums.
I have all of them.
And you love to see that stuff, and you say to yourself, you know, what was it like to live at the time when this painting
especially
was painted?
Especially the Elgin marbles.
When these marbles were made, when these buildings were built. But in fact, the story of how the stuff got into the museum is maybe even a better story, and often maybe a slightly unsavory story, or not even slightly unsavory story. The story of how art treasures got into Western museums around the world is the basis for the book Loot, The Battle Over Stolen Treasures of the Ancient World. It's written by Sharon Waxman, former New York Times reporter, author of the Waxword blog, and a reporter I met in the Middle East eons ago. Sharon, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, this is a great story of three things. It seems to me it's a great story of the ancient world attempting to, like countries like Egypt, attempting to take control over treasures that they have really lost control over the last 300-400 years. It's also an amazing story of the personality and characters behind some of the greatest museums in the world. Let's begin with Egypt. What is Egypt trying to do to preserve its treasures and take back stuff that was looted from it over hundreds of years?
Those are two different questions, because what they're doing to preserve things and what they're doing to get back are two different paths. They are trying to build new museums and improve a pretty horrible record, actually, of preservation. I wouldn't say it's so much a horrible record as it's an overwhelming task, because Egypt has so very much to care for, and it has issues like pollution and issues like lack of resources, because it's a poor country. But on the other track, there is a campaign by the chief archaeologist of Egypt, a very charismatic and unshy man called Zahi Hawass, to bring back five pieces from the five major Western museums, including the Rosetta Stone and the bust of Nefertiti, which are two of the most recognizable Egyptian artifacts out there in the world. And he says these pieces are too important to the Egyptian cultural identity to be outside the country, no matter how they left. And most of the pieces, and by the way, I should say, Egypt is a story of really plunder and loot, like the title of the book suggests. The 19th century was just absolutely a playground for Europeans who just came in and kind of denuded the country.
So let's talk about some of the institutions where that treasure ended up. We've got the Metropolitan Museum in New York, which you devote an entire chapter to. Its history begins in a rather...
with plunder, like most of the great museums, yes, not of Egypt. The Egyptian artifacts, I should specify, are not a question of plunder at the Met, but certainly the core of the Met came from, for example, Cyprus, where the man who became the first director of the Met, Emanuele Cesnola, had a couple of hundred workers digging for him on Cyprus, where he was the consul general.
How did he get it into the States?
Oh, it wasn't an issue of there were no export bans, or there was no controls at that time. So it wasn't there are export bans now, but you just, in those days, you just kind of took it in a lot of cases.
But there's a great story that it was actually wrong of the American consul to So tell that story.
Oh, that story is a good one. Yeah, okay. So a lot of the ancient world at that time was under the Ottoman Empire. And when the Ottoman Empire got wind of the fact that Cesnola had all of this stuff that he was going to send back under diplomatic cover, they sent a warship to stop the boat from leaving. And in a brilliant Byzantine bit of, I don't know, not trickery.
Subterfuge, thank you.
The edict did not, it just so happened that Cesnola was also the acting Russian consul for various reasons of alliances at that time. And there was no edict against the Russians for taking out antiquity. So they took it out under a Russian flag.
So he magically transformed himself into a Russian.
Yeah.
How has the Met improved its reputation over time?
Well, let's just say this is not... the issues are not about the Met's reputation in terms of its origins. The origins of most of the great museums, as I say, and as we discussed at a panel at NYU last night with some people who are far more scholarly than I, they're embarrassing. You know, they're frankly embarrassing, and they're lost in the mist of time for good reason, although I think that they should be discussed today because they have given rise to these restitution battles. But the problem is that in more recent times, when there are some more recently smuggled things that have been bought by the Metropolitan, Neapolitan, whether it was the Euphronius crater that went back in January, or whether it's the story of this Lydian hoard, these beautiful objects, 350 gold and silver objects that Turkey sued over in the 1980s. The Met, like most institutions, did not respond with transparency and forthcomingness. They just kind of battened down the hatches till they had to give it back.
It just sounds like a free-for-all on every level and on every continent.
It was in the 19th century. There are rules today, and there are guidelines.
And not following those guidelines led to an amazing story at the Getty Museum in your neck of the woods out in Los Angeles. So we can't go without talking about the story of the Getty.
Well, the story of the Getty is particularly interesting because it's one of the only cases we have of trying to put together an antiquities collection in modern times. I mean, how do you do that? So much stuff is already in museums or in private collections. So the Getty, you know, had to spend an awful lot of money to buy things, and it turns out that they were buying things that were being dug up, and it was kind of feeding the looting market, these smuggling groups, particularly in Italy and Greece and places like that. But it was at a time, let's say the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, it was really don't ask, don't tell. Everybody would kind of turn a blind eye. But then suddenly Italy woke up to this idea that they needed to go back and reclaim things or try to shut down this smuggling that was going on. And so they decided to sue the curator of the Getty, who had been, so she is still under criminal charges in Italy, Marion True, for having essentially done her job by following the norms of that time, but that are we're talking 20 years ago, that are no longer acceptable. So she's being sued under Italian law, and she was being sued so that to put pressure on the Getty to give back what Italy was claiming. And in the end, a year ago, the Getty caved and gave it back. But of course, Marion True's reputation is destroyed, and her career is over, and she remains on trial.
And indeed, the Getty's reputation is immeasurably degraded as a result of that. Well, Sharon Waxman, the artful dodging and the story of plunder that led to the art collections around the world is the subject of Loot, Sharon Waxman's book, The Battle Over Stolen Treasures of the Ancient World. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Fascinating.
Yeah,
thank you,
stuff.
Sharon. And we're going to move on to something less fascinating but very important, and that's
more
debt.
Debt. The art of debt.
Individual debt, company debt, country debt.
Feeling plundered
what's
these
your
days?
I know. What's your advice for figuring it out and wiping that debt clean?
Beth Logan from Massachusetts. I was calling about debt. There are three things that we do. The first one is we do budget. The second one is, despite the fact that we have two incomes, we have bought a house based on one income, which pays off since we've both been laid off since we've been married. And the third one is we use credit unions instead of banks.
Well, there you go. Those are very practical ways to deal with debt. We want your tips and tricks to lower the debt load. 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org.
On our website, Alvin Hall is taking your questions right now about getting out of debt. Send your questions now and return to our website for a live Q&A. That's Friday at 1 p.m. Eastern. And with the rumors that Hillary might be Barack Obama's Secretary of State, here's your takeaway.
When you invite the Clintons in to your tent, you accept a certain amount of drama and controversy that comes with that.
Peter Baker from our partner in the New York Times talking about the Clinton tent. I'm John Hockenberry.
I'm Adora Udoji, and this is The Takeaway.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.